Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats, health and wellness advice for women over 40 and beyond with Amanda Thebe. This is a show full of hot topics specifically for hot women. Amanda Thebe is a force of nature for women who are experiencing menopause hell and want to start feeling healthy and fit in their 40s and beyond. Through her very frank articles, podcasts, and hilarious social media presence, she's here to help you with informative advice while making you laugh like a 20-year-old throughout. Her raging fans have called her an unstoppable inspiration, resilient bitch. Please visit us at fitandchips.com. And now, here's your host, Amanda Thebe.
Hi, welcome back to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats with me, your host, Amanda Thebe. I'm delighted to have Kelly Davis on the show. She's actually been on the show previously with Megan and Sarah when they launched their product, the Glutes Floor and Pelvic Floor. But I've got Kelly on today because we want to talk about women through in fitness and the things that we need to be focusing on in our pursuit of health and wellness. Kelly is the co-author of Strong Curves. It's a woman's guide to building a better butt and body. And she's the founder of Fit Thrive Workouts. What I love about Kelly, we've chatted a few times sort of off the podcast, is that she tries to find the bond between physical and emotional fitness for women. And she has online training courses that she runs, and she does try to work with women through mindset to try and understand, you know, their worth and their place in the world. And I think that's what we're going to focus on today. So welcome to the show, Kelly. I hope I did you justice then.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Amanda. I'm excited.
Yeah, so I'm sat with my cup of tea and I'm just going to chat away with you, and I'm excited to see where this conversation goes today. So
yes, I love the unplanned, unscripted. That's just my whole entire life. So
it is. And we've done a couple of these anyway. Like I chatted with Kelly for her private online coaching, and we'll talk about that later on. But what I really like is that when I find somebody who's got a similar sort of mindset, and I think what happens is when you first come into the industry as a coach, you understand exercise and you understand nutrition and you understand the benefits and the worth of all of that. But as you start coaching clients, you realize that's actually quite a small part of the big picture. Mm-hmm. And the big part of the picture is really about mindset. And I talk about this all the time now, and I'm so glad that Kelly's on the show. So we're going to delve deeply into this, Kelly. So can you just sort of tell me how you came to this sort of conclusion and this like epiphany too with your coaching?
Yeah. Well, it was really a shift that I saw within myself, and it sort of goes along with my own story, my own journey, my own transformation. You know, my background's years ago, because now my kids are teenagers. But when my kids were younger, I sort of had that quote unquote, I hate the term, but the fat to fit mom transformation. And I was, you know, my son was like 2.5 and I hadn't worked out in years, and I just was really uncomfortable in my body. And I was, you know, in my late 20s. And I would look at all these magazines, Oxygen, and that was one of my favorites back then. And I would see they always had a feature in there of moms that were really
at the back. I used to remember reading them too at the back of the magazine. Yeah.
Yeah. It clicked in my head. I was like, all right, I'm not stuck with this body. There's no such thing as a mom body. Like, if they can do it, I can do it. And that was really like what propelled me to get back into the gym. And then eventually I got into bodybuilding. And what I realized reflectively is that, you know, I was doing the workouts, I was putting in the work, I was doing the dieting, and the difference between me before I started exercising again and taking care of my body by working out and eating well, and after, was I was 25 pounds lighter.
And that's all. Yeah.
And so I still carried around the same shame, the same guilt, the same body image issues. It was just a different, I was in a different body, but I wasn't a different person in a different body. And you really have to go through that identity change your beliefs about who you are in order to fully transform. Because I was still miserable. I was still uncertain. I wasn't doing healthy things. I was training excessively. I was eating like a bird. So, and then as I started working with more and more clients, and I'm sure you see this too, Amanda, where you can literally have the same two people, you know, let's just say two clients come to you and their goal is, I want to lose 30 pounds. And one of them just takes off. And all of a sudden, like, you know, she's just going through wardrobe after wardrobe because she has to constantly buy new clothes and all that. You know, she's like, hey, Amanda, now I want to do like a half marathon. And she's just all over it. And then the other client is actually like not getting anywhere. And maybe she's gaining weight or she's losing 5 pounds and gaining it back. And you're like, am I coaching them differently? Am I paying more attention to one than the other? Like, what's going on? What's got to give? And, you know, we can say things like age, metabolism, genetics, whatever that is, but it really is your ability to go through that personal transformation in your personality in order to reach those goals.
Yeah, it's finding the belief in yourself, right? So if we can go back to your personal story, you said that, you know, you were 25 pounds lighter, but you still held on to like shame and you didn't really fully believe in yourself. So how did, well, first of all, that was obviously a little bit of a light bulb moment for you, I'm assuming. So how did you then start working on yourself to sort of understand that more work needed to be done from a mindset point of view and not just, you know, like a physical, from the emotional point of view?
Yeah, I mean, we're always a work in progress, right? It's never like,
for sure. Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, like, oh, hey, I got to change my beliefs about myself. I'm going to start that tomorrow. You know, it's always, it's basically just realizing that we have this broken record playing in our head all the time, right? Humans are the only creature on the planet that create stress from our thoughts. So if we have all these negative thought patterns going on in our head all the time, then those thoughts are controlling our belief system about ourselves. And even crazier, I don't want to get too far into like the science behind it, but this is actual scientific stuff. Your thought can change your gene expressions. And that's why, 90% of disease is stress related. And if you ever hear the term like, oh, I'm going to worry myself sick about something, that actually happens.
Is it the genome you're talking about? Because my son came home.
Yeah,
my son came home and he'd done genomes at school and he was saying to me, do you understand, Mom, that the way that you talk to me can directly affect the outcome of my goals? And this is my 14-year-old son who's a total science nerd. And I was like, so tell me more. And you're just reaffirming this. And he went, yeah. If somebody shouts at you and someone is like berating you and makes you feel small about yourself, you'll never progress as a person because you've literally shamed them into believing they're not good enough. But if you give them positive reinforcement and you use words that help them feel like they're winning and that they're worthy, then you can change their complete outcome goals. And I was like, holy crap. And I realized that, you know, I understand that people don't respond well to being shouted at and called names.
Right.
But I never actually realized that it can literally change your whole mind. And it's wonderful.
Yeah. So there's the theory of neuroplasticity, that your brain is plastic from the time that you're born till the time that you die. So you literally wake up every day as a different person. And the thoughts that you have are not only changing the shape of your brain, but it's also changing the chemical messages that your brain is sending to your body. And that's why, they've done studies with, let's say, like I've heard a study or a story by a neuroscientist where there was a patient who was told by a doctor, like, you have cancer, you only have 3 months to live. And this was like literally before they had really done a lot of investigative research and, you know, studied the tumor or anything. So all this guy thought about was, oh my gosh, this is going to be my last Christmas with my family. And he had like all these devastating thoughts about how his life was ending. And he ended up dying like 3 months later. And then, you know, like when they actually studied the tumor, it wasn't terminal. It was a very small tumor that could have been treated. But he literally changed his thought patterns that made his body sicker, that actually did make him terminally ill. So we can think about these thoughts that we have been carrying with ourselves throughout our entire lives. And people that have amazing parents and a good upbringing can still have these things happen. So it's not just victims of poverty and discrimination and abuse. There are things that are said to us, that are done to us, that we witness, that we see, that we don't even realize we have attached to our self-worth. And then it comes with us our entire lives, and we develop these thoughts about ourselves that no matter how hard we work physically, if we're not like scratching out that broken record and poking holes in our thoughts and changing our beliefs about ourselves, then we're going to repeat those same patterns and hold on to those habits. And because we're expressing these genes inside of our body, we're physically not able to respond to our workout, to our environment based on that. And believe me, I didn't like suddenly figure this out when I was like 28 years old and be like, oh, I got it now. Like, it's been years and years of work. Yeah. And I actually look at myself, it was like, so we're coming up on Christmas in a couple months. So this Christmas, it'll be 3 years ago. We had a big family Christmas, and it was sort of, I had a really terrible transition in my business, and I knew that my marriage was ending. And I look at pictures of myself at Christmas, and I looked like fat and miserable. Honestly, I looked old. I looked like I was heavy. I just looked really, really sad. And I realized my body, even though I was working out the same, I was eating the same, I was doing everything the same, my body was reflecting what was going on in my life at that time. Today, my workouts are the same. I'm eating the same. I weigh the exact same, and I look 10 years younger and like 10 pounds lighter. And so the only thing that I have changed is like my beliefs about my life and myself.
I mean, if you go back to what you were saying about, you know, like just the, even our, like, is it in our childhood, like it doesn't matter what sort of background we come from, all of us are susceptible to it. I mean, I think back to the British upbringing, which is, you know, a little bit different to the American one, but, you know, we thrive on a sense of humor that's all based around sarcasm and
self-deprecating talk.
We do. And in a way that can be funny, but, you know, when we were kids, I'm trying not to like say my brother's name here, but it was him. He would like say, oh, how are you doing, fatty, today? And stuff like this. And, you know, those things sort of stay with you and you don't even realize. I mean, I remember once I went to my granddad's house, and this was his way of saying to me that I was looking well. And I went there and I was 16. So like the worst age to comment on a girl. And he said, come here and give me a kiss and a cuddle. And he went, oh, you're looking really good there. You're looking a little bit plump and happy. Mm-hmm. And he called me plump. And I went home and my mom looked at me and I was bawling. I went, I'm so fat. Yeah. And I'd never once in my life looked at myself and considered my weight. Never once. And it was that like made me, it triggered me. And then actually I've never really weighed very much different in my life. I think genetically I've been quite lucky there. But when I was 18, I was easily like 10 pounds heavier. And it was like the start of like me going downhill. And then I was like, you've got to give your head a shake. This is crazy. But you know, myself though, I don't think it comes from a place of vanity, but maybe a place of insecurity. I have also had those thoughts about myself, like physically, even if I wear the same thing, same way, you know, it could be a Monday and I look at myself and go, oh, you're so gross because you've had a weekend of indulgence. And by Friday, I think I look like a rock star. Mm. And really, I look the same.
Right.
It's really hard to sort of work on those thoughts, but that's what I've spent the last couple of years doing as well. And it's so freeing. That's, I think, the power of working on, you know, your self-worth. And you can do it in a really authentic way that doesn't seem like flighty and too hippie. Cause I think when we start talking in these terms, people start thinking that they're going to have to start becoming some like floaty fairy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And it took me a while to get it. Cause you know, after my divorce, I did so much like self-work, you know, cause I realized that obviously anytime you go through a huge trial in life, you're going to come out with a bit of PTSD, a bit of like work that you have to do on yourself. But I also realized there was a lot of stuff from my past that I hadn't worked through. So I'm like, okay, well, I only have like 36 years of work to catch up on, right? But I immersed myself into more of like the spiritual side of the same exact work. And I wasn't getting it. And I'm like, okay, like this is, you know, the manifestation and the you can become anybody you want to be. Your path is already paved, all that stuff. I'm like, I hear you, but I don't get it.
I'm not feeling it. Are you just, yeah, you
were realizing the science behind it. Then it was all like it was all congruence. And I just really think that however your belief system is built is really the path you have to take. So if you have a really strong belief system in your spirituality, that might be the best path for you to start, you know, really changing your identity and your values around yourself. But if you're more scientific based, then maybe that's like what you have to immerse yourself in. And there's a good mix of both. There really is. I mean, it doesn't have to be either end of the spectrum. It's whatever you adhere to most. You know, but there obviously is that spiritual element to it, but there also is a lot of hard science that's coming up about it. The brain science is so new. So new. So attaching, you know, and you look at like old world religions, like Buddhism and Hinduism, like so much of this stuff is based in that religion, but it was all a little bit like mythical. Like it was present, but they didn't understand the science behind it. And now they're really attaching a lot of science to it, which I find absolutely fascinating.
And I'm the same as you. I've tried the more spiritual side. I did yoga for like 15 years and even went to India and I even sat in a cave with a sadhu and I still didn't feel spiritual. I just realized it's not me.
And that's what they say. It's like, you know, like you try, because I've done that, going to ashrams and stuff, and it's like, all right, well, if you bring your problems into the cave, then you just have cave problems, you know?
I have cave problems, yeah. Cave problems. And yeah, but I also have looked into the spiritual side of things, and there's a really great book that I love called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. And it's a little bit, yeah, and he's actually a colleague of mine. My husband went to school with him, so he's a friend of mine. Yeah, I know, it's a small world. But the, and I love the, and it's a little bit off topic, but it also is about like the way the brain sort of works and how it can be retrained and how your memory works. And
I reference it a lot.
Yeah. It's a great book that I think everybody should read, also because I want him to get royalties from it, but also because it's just such a brilliant book. But it's, and I have, you know, followed a lot of people's work as well. And it's just so amazing how the weight that's on your shoulders can be lifted as soon as you start to educate yourself. Even if you have a spiritual belief or a faith that really helps you through this, having a little bit of education, like to back that up, can be such a powerful thing. And so for me, I didn't even realize that there'd been a shift in my mindset until I went to try clothes on only very recently and tried a pair of jeans on that were my regular size and they felt a bit tight. So I just got the larger size, tried them on, and they fit great. And it's when I was going to the car and I realized I've just bought a pair of jeans an extra size larger, and I didn't flinch. I didn't even look in the mirror. There was no emotion. There was none attached. Awesome. And I was like, literally, I wanted to rip my bra off and burn it. It was like a suffragette moment. Yes, women should all do this. And
totally, yeah.
And it's huge, right? And so so if we went back to those two women, so the one woman just had that, like, you know, almost like regimented mindset of being able to put the work in so she saw results. Chances are we don't know how she ended up, right? If she lost the weight, we don't know if she would have been any happier. But the other woman who didn't see a shift, that's what was blocking her, right? Like that was the woman that couldn't make any progress until she worked on.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and like taking my own story is that I was going to extreme measures. You know, I literally like was eating 1,000 calories and doing all the bodybuilding stuff. And I think that's why I lost the 25 pounds. But then I had this attachment to being small. Like, I was afraid to go up in size. I was afraid to gain weight. I was afraid of all these different things because I had attached my self-worth to being smaller. And it's so, so common. You know, we have the same demographic, really intelligent women who they get it. They're smart. They understand fitness. They understand food. But they also tend to be overthinkers. And they tend to attach their self-worth to their workouts, to their body, to their clothing size. And it's nobody's fault, because we have been conditioned in our society our entire lives to do that.
I think these women are usually too bright, and that's the problem. They know too much.
Total overthinkers, really, really smart. Believe me, I know, because you and I are on the same wavelength. We've just kind of got it a little bit more figured out. Because that's our job, that's our specialty, that's our strength. But it's so easy to attach your self-worth to the work that you're putting in, to what you see in the mirror, to how your clothes fit, when it's so much bigger than that. And for you to have that moment in the dressing room where you're like, well, okay, I like these jeans. Maybe a larger size is going to work for my body better. Cool. I love my body in these jeans. I'm going to buy them. It's the right price. It's the right fit. Let's go. And there was no attaching your self-worth to the size. It was attaching, you felt really good in the jeans, and you felt like, this is something that I want to invite into my life. And it just having that shift and not even realizing it is so, so cool.
And I think that's what happens with a lot of women that go through this process. They don't even realize the progress they've made, because it slowly snowballs, and it's not like something, like you said, it's not like you wake up and go, okay, I love myself. Let's go. I've got this. I'm rocking. It can take time. And like the neuroplasticity that you're talking about, and that change in the genome, all of those positive thoughts do take time to occur. I have a friend actually whose daughter went to a school that is based purely on neuroplasticity. That's all it is. So the kids spend time drawing shapes with one hand over their eye. And I know it sounds sort of really crazy, but it's for kids with learning disabilities, and it helps to retrain their brain. And it's a proven science. Like you said, it's not just like woo-woo. It's like...
Absolutely. Like spontaneous remission. There's so many different studies. In fact, I was just at a speaking event, and I had talked a little bit about that in my talk. And this woman came up to me after, which is just like, you put that vibe out in there and you're going to attract people that are like, oh yeah, that's me. She came up to me after, and she told me that she was diagnosed with stage 3 cervical cancer. She was told she had 3 years to live. She was told she had to go through chemo and radiation and all this stuff. And she's like, no, I believe that God is on my side. However, God is the universe, right? God is energy. Whatever we believe God is, it's energy, right? And we are 99.999% energy, right? Like, very small percentage of us is particles, material, but we focus so much on that. And she's like, I believe that God is on my side. I know that I have a bigger purpose. I know that my cancer doesn't define me. And she beat it with no medical intervention after they were telling her that she was terminal. And I've met other people like this as well. I met a woman, actually, it was at a yoga retreat. And when she was a teenager, she was just really stressed out. She grew up, where was she? I think Colombia. And she was a high achiever. She was going to school, working full time, trying to support her family. She got into a really good college, and she fell so ill. Like, she was just like a beanpole, and she was sick and stressed out, and she couldn't eat. She couldn't hold food down, to the point where she was comatose. And they literally thought there was nothing they can do for her. And everybody, I mean, this is a crazy story. Her whole family came over to her house, because they thought that she was going to die. And they all just like stayed in her house and prayed and prayed and prayed. And all of a sudden she woke up and got out of bed. And it's like hearing stories like that and realizing that it's energy. And we're constantly creating energy, and our thoughts create energy that drive our emotions. So if we're stuck in these negative thought patterns all the time, that is the energy that we're bringing into our body. And that's how our body is going to respond.
So, If we can take that sort of conversation down to how we speak to our kids, because I know we often talk about it sort of like in a passing phase, but I think it's really important for like the women who listen to this show, and there's some guys as well, that, you know, the words that we say to our children really do matter, and the way we frame things and the way we talk about ourselves and them can really define the path that they're going to take. There's so many people I know that struggle with where their story is. Yes, well, my mum used to smother me with love, and that just meant she fed us.
Yeah, you know,
that was her.
Very common.
Very, very common, right? So, what can you sort of say about that? Like, have you done any work, or have you looked into? Because I know that, like, for me, even just, we're in a different day and age now where every single word I say to my kids, I have to think about. I'm not nearly as loose-tongued as I used to be. You know, I have to really, like, I realize I'm influencing my children. And when my children speak now, they don't speak like children. I realize they speak like young adults. It's crazy. Yeah. They have a vocabulary that's so different to mine because of the day and age that we're in. And I think it's really important for women, especially with daughters, to send the right message.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sons too.
Yes, and sons too, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because they have a lot of the same struggle, just under a different context. You know, there's so much pressure that's put on our kids. They're obviously exposed to a lot more now than you and I were when we were young, just because it's information is so accessible. And for me, what I've learned, because my son is 12, my daughter's 15, is that I've just always met them where they're at. I've never dumbed down things. I've never sheltered them in a sense where I tried to hide things from them. My kids are very intelligent. They're very emotionally intelligent. So I sort of put myself in their world and I meet them where they're at. And it's more about constantly being consistent and reinforcing the conversation at home, because you can't control what they hear and what they see when they go out into the world. But if you have that open dialogue and they feel comfortable sharing with you their experiences, the things that were said to them, the things they heard, the things they saw, the things that are going on in their world, then that gives you the opportunity to reinforce your values and your core beliefs as a human being, so that no matter what, you're always home plate. You're always.
I love that, because I always bring the conversation back to what our values are as a family and individuals. Yeah. Without telling them what to think. Mm-hmm. You know, usually it's about integrity, honesty, authenticity,
yeah,
things like that that really matter, and respect. And I think that as long as you give the children a voice and you listen to them, and then you share and have an open conversation, I think it's a really important, mm-hmm, a really important thing. So, you have a client and you want to start working with her, and you really understand, looking at her or speaking to her, because actually you do more online, that, you know, this lady needs help with the mindset, because she's talking to you about her macros not fitting, or that she's working out and there's no change. And we find that that's often like a common theme, like, I'm doing everything I can or nothing's changed and I'm still putting on weight or I'm not losing it.
Yeah.
But how would you start addressing like where she's at? I know that's not an easy question. And so I just thought you can just like talk through maybe some of the thoughts that you might have and how approach the subject.
And it's so funny. And those are the things that light me up. And I'm sure it's you too. You know, you're in fitness long enough, you get tired of answering the questions of, you know, well, how much protein should I eat? You know, should I be focusing on strength or endurance? And here's like those, like,
they're a small part.
Obviously, yeah. Not to devalue people wanting that information, but it kind of makes me think like, that's not it. So if somebody comes to me and they're like, look, I'm embarrassed about this. In fact, I had this conversation with a dear, dear client the other day. You know, she opened up to me a lot, and I'm like, we're getting on the phone. Cause it was an email of like, I don't get what's happening. Like, I've taken your advice. Cause she was, you know, she was sort of the type of person that attached her worth to how much she was sweating, to what her heart rate monitor was saying, you know? So we slowed her down a lot in that sense. And she's like, I've been following your workouts. I've slowed down. I know that, I'm not overdoing it. She's like, but I keep gaining weight. I don't know what's going on. And then I was able to go back in her history and realize very recently, she went through something pretty traumatic that as women, we don't think about as trauma. You know, she went through the process of IVF, which to me is very emotionally traumatic. I'm like, okay, can we talk about that experience? And she sort of told me, I told her, just the thought of wanting to be a mother so badly and realizing that it's not working, that takes a huge emotional toll on you.
Well, it can take so much of a toll that it stops people getting pregnant.
Well, yeah. And this conversation was like an hour long, so I won't go into the whole thing. But then I was like, so tell me about what was going on at that time. She's like, oh, it was really stressful. I had to get my blood drawn every other day. The facility was a half an hour commute. And then, so I was trying to fit in my workouts in between all that. And I mean, it was just like this really high stress moment. You know, we always think of like pregnancy as like something beautiful and natural. And, you know, that was kind of, it was a very stressful, traumatic time. It sort of took away the beauty. It became like a project, a side project in her life. And then after her son was born, he wasn't thriving. So then we were on this other like strictly regimented schedule. And I was like, that's like, you probably have some PTSD attached to that time in your life.
And she's not looking back on that with joy.
Yeah, we need to go. Yeah, we need to. I mean, obviously her son is thriving. She has this beautiful toddler, you know, but I'm like, you need to go back and sort of forgive that part in your life, because she talked about how she hasn't had periods and everything. And we don't know, but your thoughts could be telling your body, like, I am not worthy of getting pregnant, so now my periods have stopped. We don't know. We can't really determine that. But I'm like, you need to go back and revisit that space in your life and forgive yourself and go through that emotional process rather than sort of shelving it and being like, oh yeah, I had IVF and then it was stressful. And then that's a big deal. Like, don't just write it off as like a story in your life. Like, you need to commend yourself for going through that and rising up and forging ahead. But you also need to realize you're still holding on to a lot of that. And that's probably creating the stress in your body right now that isn't allowing your body to respond to all your hard work.
And I mean, and we know that stress is like, it can be a killer anyway. There's so many ways stress can impact the body, and we totally underestimate. I know 3 people this year that have had breakdowns purely from too much stress.
Yeah.
And it can ruin people's lives. And so we can't, in fact, one of the things that I talk about all the time when I talk about menopause is that women really need to focus on stress management over anything else, because it's sort of one of the things that you can control more than anything else. You're not controlling your hormones right now. They're doing what the hell they want. They're just playing a different ball game. But your cortisol and insulin to some degree are within your control, and working on really calming down and finding like space for yourself and finding some forgiveness and love. Yeah. And doing the things that make you thrive again can be great. In fact, one of the things I say over and over again, so listen out if I sound like a broken record, is that one of the biggest gifts that menopause has given me is the power to say no, because I've always been the giver. Like, I'll always do anything for anyone. I'll never say no to anyone. And I got to the stage where I was like, if I say yes one more time, I'm going to burn out. I just can't keep at this pace. And it's been so freeing to know that ability was there. And I actually think that was the start of my journey to like just taking the pressure off myself, removing the guilt, because I'm one of those people that holds a lot of guilt.
Totally.
And it's quite freeing, but it was a process. You know, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah. And one thing that I've learned, because I am an empath, I am nurturing by nature, you know, that I've learned, and it was one of the hardest things to say to myself, but it's so true, and I try to teach my clients this, is that when you're constantly giving yourself away, you're serving no one. And it really is a form of external validation, because you're constantly meeting the needs of others. And it's like this little, oh my gosh, my old assistant said this term once, and I love it. It's like a little brain hug. that you're getting, right? Like I've helped someone else and I get this little brain hug and it gives me that moment of feeling good about myself, but then I feel like I'm not doing enough. But you're constantly seeking that external validation by giving, 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 and say, oh, no, I don't need anything. I'm good, right? But we thrive in reciprocity and we thrive in when we have those moments of peace and those moments of rest. So if we're constantly running ourselves ragged because we think that we're meeting everybody else's needs, we're really serving no one except for our own ego. And that is like such a huge thing for women to take in and really digest, is that you're honest. Because what happens when you're running around like crazy? Like you don't, you know, like maybe you're like, oh, well, I don't have time to like be intimate with my husband, or you don't feel good about yourself. You don't feel sexy, or you don't have time to sit down and rest. And then you're in a bad mood, or you start to feel resentful because you're always doing things for everybody. And then like nobody's doing anything for you, even though you tell them not to. It's just these crazy thought patterns. And you know, that's one thing that I've really done since my divorce and becoming a single mom, is like realizing that my kids don't have to do everything. And that we don't, you know, we don't have to accept all party invitations. We don't have to be in activities 12 months a year. And I don't have to be the one that throws all the parties and bakes all the cookies and volunteers for everything.
It's that throwing the perfectionist mother away.
Yeah, and we're so much happier.
Oh my goodness, so much happier. And like they, yeah. Like it, we, there's on the group that I have, like people were talking about, you know, the lack of desire to cook for their family. And like, it's probably just like fatigue and stuff that's overwhelming them through menopause. But they were saying like, I can't be bothered. I've got 5 meals I constantly rotate. And I felt like saying, well, good for you. I have 2 that I rotate. So you're winning. You're winning that game. Take the pressure off yourself. And
totally.
You know, what you've just said then might sound hard for people to hear, because it really is like for a lot of women, a lot of us are empaths or pleasers.
Yeah.
And you saying to them that, you know, you're doing it for that brain hug, or, you know, just for that like reassurance that you're still a good person and all of those things. You don't need that. You know, you are still a good person, and there's, you know, you don't have to be everything to everyone. And it's huge, right? And it will give you then the time to just take pause and just look at your life and take stock. And I often hear that women, you know, like as they get older, start to just not slow down as in like physically, although some women do, but they slow down in their desires to like help people and to do everything. And I remember like, honestly, 10 years ago, like if one of the pictures was wonky or if one of the ornaments was not in the right place, I would have this total stress out. And then I had a party at the house.
Holidays were like no fun because you were
no fun because everything had to be just so. And if people came over for dinner, everything had to be cleaned. My husband would be stood around like a lemon, not knowing what to do. And I'd be like, what the fuck's wrong with you? And,
you know, and you've lived here for 20 years. How do you know what to do?
You still don't know me. And I remember I had this one party and one of the guests thought it would be really funny, and they stayed over to turn every picture around and to turn every ornament around and to mess up the sofa cushions. And I came downstairs and I was horrified. And then I started laughing and I thought, oh, holy crap, am I that controlling? Is that really what I've become? And it was such a light bulb moment, but it was, I had to put them straight, of course. But no, but now if they're a little bit wonky, I'm okay. But you know, I just see how I've evolved and how women are evolving, and we're just taking less on and we're just focusing on the stuff that's really important.
Yeah.
And by doing that, you really are giving yourself a chance to be just in it with yourself and be present. Doggy's back again.
I know. Grumpy old dog.
Grumpy old dog's been quite good this podcast though. I like that.
Yeah, it's really freeing, you know. And now it's like, okay, well, if I leave the pot in the sink after dinner so that I can go for a walk with my daughter, then it's worth it. You know, you just have to really start having those value shifts and realizing like if your house isn't perfect all of the time, it's completely acceptable. As long as you're creating those value shifts and you're really taking ownership for what you want your life to look like.
Exactly. I had Josh Hillis on and he talks a lot about values. I know he's sort of studying that at the moment. And I've done a value assessment. And actually anyone listening, if they want to do that, if you just Google values, personal values, there's little tests you can do online that are free. And you usually get about 30 different values and you pick 10. Mm-hmm. And then you answer a few questions and it sort of ends up giving you your top three values. And mine was family. Pretty much most women's tend to be values tend to be family. And it was really great for me moving to Houston because it was a chance to sort of start my I'd moved from an in-person trainer to a more online and more public trainer. And I decided right then that I was only going to work till 3 o'clock every day because that's the time I have to leave to get my kids to school. And I want to enjoy them, even though they ignore me when I get home. But sometimes they actually sit down and it just took so much pressure off me. Whereas before I would work till 11 and 12 at night. And I'm not going to do that anymore. I've just really understood what matters to me. And, and like you say, it's quite freeing. And for me, when a woman gets to that place of real comfort in herself and in her life, then she can start doing the work to lose the weight, if that's still important. Because I don't know about you, Kelly, that when I work with people, often the weight shift ends up being not the priority anymore.
Yeah. One of my favorite feedback, it was an email I got from a distance client. And she was just killing it. She was just a rock star. And it was just paragraphs and paragraphs about how she had been promoted at work and how she was managing the stress of an audit at work really well. And she was bringing her food and not eating out. And she was using her workouts as that stress relief and still home to put her son to bed and all these different things. She was going to parties and enjoying herself without having to consume all the alcohol and food and just lists and lists of all these really cool things going on in her life. And then she's like, by the way, I just had to replace all my work skirts because I'm in a size that I haven't seen in 10 years. That was a very, 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 very last thing she said. That was almost like an afterthought. And I was that is exactly what I want. For
and she probably didn't understand without realizing as well. She probably shifted so dramatically in her life that was a consequence of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because when you start to take care of yourself emotionally, you start to take care of yourself physically without sort of really realizing it. And I think that's it. That's a big message.
Yeah. And you just have this energy about you that you don't even, you're like, whoa, where did this come from? I just feel really good all the time. And one of my favorite things to tell myself is for stress management is, when something freaks me out or stresses me out or isn't going my way or something comes up and I just sit there, I'm like, you're not going to die. You're not going to die. And I know that sounds melodramatic, but it's just a kind of a way to realize, reset, okay, stress is what kills you. This thing that you're stressing about is not going to kill you. It's the stress. So you're not going to die. Things will always work out. Just stay level-headed about it and realize that, good things are to come. And that's always my reset button.
That's awesome. That's actually a really good way to end with you not dying on the show.
Yeah, I'm not going to die.
Ellie, thank you for coming on the show. If people want to find you, they can head over to fitthriveworkouts.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's my website. That's where all of my workouts content is. And then I'm Kelly Davis Fit on Instagram. I post lots of free workout tips on there. Those are my two main hubs, really.
Yeah, that's great. And thanks for coming on the show. I really enjoyed this talk and I didn't know where it was going to go. And I'm really glad we started talking about the neuroplasticity. It's just such a great subject. Yeah. And keep up the good work, Kelly.
You too, Amanda. Thanks again for having me.
Thanks very much. And thank you for listening. Tune in next week for my next guest. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on the services offered by Amanda, please head over to her website at fitandchips.com. That's FITNCHIPS.com or her Fit and Chips Facebook page.
Leave a comment and she promises to respond to all questions. The views and advice expressed by Amanda Thebe are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always contact your healthcare provider.